happening in such close quarters, it was inevitable that some shot would make the mark, and a particle beam turret on the aft ventral quarter of the warship scored a direct hit that shredded part of the spinner's crystalline hull. Superheated atmospheric gases vented from the breach, and the craft veered off again. Its companion sought out the cannon that had landed the strike and melted it into blackened slag with a high-intensity burst of power. The Tholians attacking the warship extended away and regrouped. Less than a kilometer distant, the third craft in their triad continued its savage assault on the bigger, slower star freighter. A storm of plasma bolts rained upward toward the twisting, turning shape of the Tholian spinner, but none of them connected with their attacker, and Saru felt his heart sink as the alien craft began to mimic the transport ship's roll and lurch escape course. Each hit from the Tholian's main gun was a hammer blow, making the decks tremble and the screens hanging from the ceiling flicker and fade. Warning displays hinted at the unfolding horror taking place below decks and down in the cargo pods. Several levels of the forward module were torn open and naked to space, and there were sporadic damage readings trickling in from the container units to the aft. Sections of those modules were holed and losing life support. How many dead already? The horrible question made Saru sick as he contemplated it. All those civilians back there, the old and the young. Ija. He shook off the thought. There was no time to dwell on that. The Kelpian frantically tried to divide his attention between the control console in front of him and a secondary drive station to his right. It was hard work, dealing with a non-Starfleet interface and two sets of outputs, some of them in conflict, others in accord. Saru released a low gasp of exasperation as the ship rocked again and his head snapped up. He looked toward Wheaton, and the ensign appeared every bit as beleaguered as Saru felt, trying to take in too much information at once and run a cargo vessel never designed for combat through a deadly battle scenario. There are too few of us up here. Half of the control podiums were unmanned, while Nathal, Hekan, and the others dashed from one to another, attempting to do the work of a full bridge crew. And we are failing. That cold inevitability that always lurked in the back of Saru's thoughts crept forward. The sense of the coming of death, the fear that never left him. It was welling up. An old memory came with the sensation. Saru remembered being a young child, cowering in a cave, still stiff-legged and ropey of limb. He remembered seeing the fear in his mind's eye like a dark, glutinous mass of oil, rising up to cover him, smother him, until there was nothing left of the Kelpian called Saru, no intellect or reason or persona. The fear would drown him and fill every corner of his being. Then there would be nothing left but a terrified, quaking animal. He would be consumed. His long fingers tightened into fists. I will not submit. Now, as he had then, he pushed back with all the strength he could muster, struggling to free himself from the inexorable gravity of the terror. If he could just stop himself from giving in to the burning fear for a second more, for 10 seconds more, a minute, then he could hold it back. I am afraid, he told himself, but it shall not rule me. I can't hit him, said Wheaton, cursing under his breath. Somebody give me a push on lateral control, and do it quickly! Vetch dithered over his panel. Which one is that? Red keypad! Rotate through 90 degrees! Hekan called out from across the compartment. Red? The Gorlan speaker faltered. He was out of his depth, and he knew it.
I do not...
That one! Snarled Maddo, lurching over from the console he was using, stabbing a finger at the panel in front of Vetch. Too late, said the ensign, and he swore again as the ship weathered another shuddering impact.
That thing out there is going to carve us up like a turkey.
That would not be optimal, Saru replied, burying his darker emotions. The fear would come back. It always did. But not in this second, not in this minute. He would not allow it. The Kelpian gripped the edges of the lectern-like podium in front of him and sucked in a breath over his tongue. The sense organs in the roof of his mouth tasted burnt plastic, perspiration, and the tang of ozone.
"We can't go on like this," he said. "Ensign Wheaton is correct. We need to shift our strategy."
"Strategy?"
echoed Nathal.
"Did it escape your notice that this is a cargo barge, Lieutenant Saru, not a warship? The only tactics we have to hand are run and run faster."
He raised a hand.
"Respectfully, I disagree."
Saru glanced at Hekan.
"Before, you talked about this ship's multiple tractor beam arrays. Can you activate them?"
"You want me to channel power away from our shields and engines?"
"Yes."
Saru gave a brisk nod.
"And also, I am going to stop rolling the ship."
"You'll be handing that Tholian an easy target," said Nathal. "They can blow through the hull, target this deck. Kill us all with a single shot."
"That is precisely what I hope they will attempt."
He turned to Wheaton. "Ensign, conserve your fire on all dorsal plasma turrets. Stand by to trigger them in unison on my order." To his credit, Wheaton didn't hesitate to follow the command.
"Aye, sir. Reconfiguring."
"The Paliar makes a good point," snapped Mado. "Have you suffered some kind of neural damage, Outworlder?"
"Please, trust me."
Saru took another deep breath and held it.
"Here we go. Halting roll program, now."
He feathered the thruster controls to make it look like there had been a system failure, and the Tholian spinner took the bait. The attacker bore down toward the bow, angling for a kill shot at the upper decks, just as Nathal had warned.
"He's coming in fast," called Wheaton.
"Hekan, the tractor beams," said Saru.
"Calculate the mass of the Tholian ship and snare it. Use every emitter you can."
"That will overload our field coils," said Nathal.
"We don't need to hold it for long."
Saru looked back to Wheaton.
"Do we, Ensign?"
A wild grin broke out on the junior officer's face as he got what Saru was doing.
"No, sir, we don't."
His hands flashed over the weapons controls, copying Hekan's tractor target coordinates straight into the firing solutions for the plasma cannons.
"Brace for it,"
called Hekan as the Tholian ship dove at them.
"Ready? Ready? Now!"
Bright emerald lines of light stabbed out from the tractor beam emitters all along the upper fuselage of the star freighter, converging on the slick, silvery hull of the spinner and stopping it dead. The energy effect locked hard onto the crystalline vessel, and the shock of momentum transfer resonated through the cargo ship's hull. Power regulators blew out in chugs of hot white smoke, and the bigger craft moaned. Saru wondered what the Gorlands down in the cargo pods were thinking. Was the fear smothering them? Did they feel this, hear that, and believe that their end was at hand?
"Not today," Saru muttered.
On the main screen, the Tholian craft struggled against the pull of the tractors, the intercooler grids on its drives burning crimson as it tried to tear away. Hekan coughed through the smoky air.
"I can't hold it much longer."
"Ensign," said Saru, "fire all turrets."
"Firing!"
Wheaton slapped the flat of his palm over all the plasma gun triggers, and they lit off in a bright ripple of light that converged on the shape of the Tholian attacker. The alien craft splintered, and whole sections of the outer hull cleaved off, exposing glittering innards that resembled seams of glowing magma in a rock bed. It could have shrugged off one or two hits from the plasma cannons, but a strike from all of them at once, and with no way to avoid the impacts, doomed the spinner. Hekan finally deactivated the tractors before their grids could overheat with the strain, but
it had been enough. The Tholian attacker fell away from the star freighter, a trail of glassy pieces glittering behind it as it tumbled and spun. Saru heard a ragged cheer go up across the compartment as the other two spinners, one damaged and limping, the other still intact, swept past their companion ship and snagged the wreck with yellow web beams.
"They're breaking off," said Nathal, stepping closer to his station. "Very impressive, Lieutenant Saru. I've never heard of the Tholians retreating before."
Saru tried to reach for a fraction of the elation that showed on the faces of Wheaton, Vetch, and Hekan, but he found nothing but a grim certainty. That is not a retreat. His hand drifted to the back of his scalp and the threat ganglia that still twitched there. Have no doubt, they're coming back. Saru's eyes widened as he studied the waveband readout on the shuttle's subspace radio panel. The message he attempted to send from the Yang was reflecting back at him in a shower of garbled echoes, his words broken up and distorted before the signal could even travel a few light seconds. He sighed and slumped back in the pilot's chair, looking out of the canopy but not really focusing on the view beyond. It was a near miracle that the shuttlecraft had survived the engagement with the Tholians and remained clamped, limpet-like, to the hull of the Pelear star freighter. Close by, a particle cannon blast had ripped open a section of the transport ship's maintenance decks. Had it been aimed a few degrees to the starboard, the beam would have cut the Yang in half. Still, the familiar confines of the shuttle were doing nothing to meter Saru's turbulent mood. He had not exaggerated when he told Commander Nathal that the Tholians would be back for another round. It was a known trait, a familiar battle tactic of their species, sending in a probing attack in the first instance to gain the measure of their enemy and following it up with a more heavily armed strike. There were additional Tholian ships out there, he was certain of it. Saru squinted at the darkness outside, peering through the debris from the battle a few hours earlier, as if he might be able to pick out some sign of the glittering crystal ships from his vantage point. The lieutenant couldn't see them, but the disruption of his attempts to contact the Shenzhou meant only one thing. The Tholians were broadcasting a scattering field throughout the system, blocking outgoing subspace radio signals and fogging long-range sensors. Three spinner ships would not be enough to do that, and he lost himself in contemplation of what size of flotilla the assembly might have sent to the sanctuary system.
5 ships? 10?
How many combat craft did a cargo vessel and a warship merit by the standards of the Tholian military?
"I have the unpleasant certainty that we're going to find out, sir," said a voice behind him.
Saru jolted with surprise and twisted in the seat to see Petty Officer Yashe climbing into the Yang's rear compartment. He had been so deep in his own thoughts that he hadn't heard her cat-footed approach.
"Was I speaking aloud?"
"Yes, sir."
She managed a half-hearted smile.
"Don't worry. I won't tell anyone."
Yashe's milk-pale face and her blue uniform jumpsuit were blackened with smoke and grease, but she seemed unfazed by it. "Report," said Saru, giving her his complete attention. If they made it through all this, the Kelpian was going to enter commendations in the log for Yashe, Zoxum, and the rest of the rescue party. Under the petty officer's guidance, they had evacuated the unconscious Saladin Johar and the rest of the people being held in the mess hall when the freighter's fire suppression system had failed during the Tholian attack. The Vakshaw woman explained it all in a plain, matter-of-fact manner, but it was clear to Saru that she had deliberately put herself in danger several times in order to get the team and several of Nathal's crew to safety.
"The chief engineer is in the medical bay," she concluded. "Zoxum is there now with Subin. Last I saw, he was complaining about the Pelear dock bots and patching up whoever needed it."
"You did well," said Saru.
She frowned.
"I'm sorry we couldn't get to you, Lieutenant. I know you could have used more hands on deck up there."
He nodded.
"We made do." Yashe jutted her chin toward the communication panel. Any luck reaching the Shenzhou? Saru met her gaze. He saw no point in being anything less than honest. We are on our own. Can we warp out of here? He shook his head. There is extensive damage to the engineering deck. Yashe made a soft spitting noise in her throat, a sound that Saru knew was a Vokshaw curse word.
All that work we did to get this ship up and running, undone in a matter of minutes. Johar is going to be really pissed off when he wakes up.
He will be. For a second, Saru flashed back to what Ensign Wheaton had previously suggested, that someone else be in command of this sorry situation, and contemplated how it would feel to give up the burden of this responsibility to an officer of superior rank. Saru gave a faint shake of the head, dismissing the traitorous thought. The Kelpian had been in charge of personnel before, in training at the academy, sometimes in task groups aboard the Shenzhou. But never like this. Never in a state where so many lives hung in the balance, where sentient beings would either survive or surely perish based on the choices he was making. Saru knew himself well enough to recognize that he could be arrogant at times, but this wasn't one of them. A good commander needed to be many things, to show strength when it was required, along with humility and compassion. He had never thought it would be so hard to strike a balance between those things, but now here he was, learning that lesson the hard way. Burnham had once spoken to him of a human axiom, something about being careful what you wished for, and now he saw the truth of it. How does Captain Georgiou make this look so effortless? Saru wondered. He resolved to ask her. If you live to see her again, said the faithless inner voice. His communicator beeped, interrupting his train of thought. He snatched it up from his belt, flicking it open. Saru here? Lieutenant, this is Wheaton on the command tier. The ensign's voice was tense. Sir, you better get back up here. War is about to break out. Saru thought he heard the sound of raised, angry voices in the background. Have the Tholians returned? Negative, said Wheaton. It's the Gorlands and the Paliars. They're not listening to anything I say, and I think fists are going to start flying any second. On my way. Saru snapped the communicator shut and vaulted out of the pilot's chair toward the hatch in the floor. What should I do, sir? Said Yashe. Saru gave her a follow-me gesture. I think I will need all the support I can muster.
You are going to do the Tholians' work for them! Spat Nathal,
cutting at the air in front of the Gorlands with the blade of her hand.
This will make things worse!
Do not speak to us like we are fools! Snapped Maddo.
He cast around, indicating the additional Gorlands who had arrived from the lower decks to fill the empty operator stations on the freighter's bridge.
You need us to fly this barge if there is any hope of evading the Tholian counterattack!
Everybody just calm down, said Wheaton, trying to interpose himself between the two groups. Maddo's right. With the Gorlands rounding out the numbers up here, we can pilot this ship properly, react faster, maybe get through this in one piece.
Nathal growled, looking to her second-in-command for support.
I agreed to accept help, but not from inexperienced neophytes. Has any one of them ever crewed a ship of this tonnage? These men are former colony ship crew, insisted Kijo, her voice rising. They can handle themselves. I do not share your confidence, Gorlan. We'll be killed by their incompetence before the Tholians fire a shot.
Wheaton didn't respond to Nathal's retort, partly because, if he was honest, he agreed with her. Twice already, the Gorlands had accidentally set off potentially lethal system conflicts in the big ship's control matrix by working the consoles incorrectly, and the ensign was afraid that when the shooting started again, any such mistake would prove fatal.
Then get your own people to fly this creator-forsaken hulk, spat Vetch. That's if your doting father will allow it.
That was exactly the wrong thing to say, thought Wheaton, and he saw Nathal's expression turn stony.
"Commander, listen."
She looked right through him, glaring at the Gorlan speaker.
"The crew of the carrier have their own repairs to address. Their ship was hit much harder than this one."
Nathal advanced on Vetch.
"But as for my father, do you wish to prove him right? Gorlans are obstinate and primitive, is that true? Are you too dense to be told what to do?"
All four of Vetch's hands came up to jab at Nathal.
"Arrogant Pleiar!"
"Stop right now!"
Wheaton turned to see a gangly figure emerge from the elevator, pointing his hand at them. The ensign had never heard Lieutenant Saru yell at anyone before, and his voice had a whip-crack edge to it that was hard to ignore. Saru strode into the middle of the command deck with Yashe a couple of steps behind him, scanning the room with a hawkish glare. When the Kelpian unfolded to his full height, his hairless scalp was almost touching the ceiling of the compartment, and Wheaton realized that all this time Saru had been purposefully slouching in order to bring himself closer to everyone else's eye level. Not so now. Now Saru wanted all attention on him. As fascinating as it is to see sentience bickering in their natural habitat, it does not solve any of our current problems, he snapped, and Wheaton thought he heard an echo of the Shenzhou's captain in the lieutenant's delivery. The fact that we are standing here proves that you are capable of working together in the face of a greater crisis. Like it or not, we are in an alliance. Starfleet, Gorlan, and Pleiar. The Tholian Assembly considers all of us to be alien intruders. Division now will result in our destruction. A weighty silence fell across the bridge in the wake of his words, and Saru let the moment stretch, let them all dwell on the harsh truth behind what he had said. For Nathal and Hekan and the other Pleiars, there was only their individual sense of the fear that simmered beneath the surface. But for Saru, the undercurrent of anger, terror, frustration was raw and real and present. He could feel it in the dissonant aura fields being projected by every one of the Gorlans. The ghostly sensation of their emotional states made the spiracles in his skin itch. He felt their dread prickling the air, akin to the pressure of a far-off thunderstorm. Saru was the only non-Gorlan who could consciously sense it. The Pleiars might pick up on it in some subliminal way, unknowingly reacting in opposition and feeding the negativity, but they could never know it as he did. The intimacy of it, the sense of creeping doom that would sustain itself if they let it. The fragile coalition that had formed in the face of the Tholian threat was in danger of crumbling. That could not be allowed to happen.
"I do not doubt the commitment of the Gorlans," said Nathal, reeling in her earlier irritation. "But I am afraid this task may be beyond them."
Kijo was about to answer, and Nathal pressed on.
"You are all civilian spacers. You are not battle-trained as Pleiar Zell crews are. This ship may be a transport vessel, but every one of my people aboard it is a graduate of our military college."
"We are not warriors, this is true," admitted Maddo. "But Gorlans are fighters. If the Creator had not made us so, then we would not have lived to carve out colonies on dozens of unyielding worlds."
A thought formed in Saru's mind, and he took a deep breath, preparing himself. All through this ill-fated mission, the Kelpian had been struggling against the tide of events, trying time and again to find the right path, to do the right thing. And each time he found himself trying to convince others to go against their innate natures. "Can I make them see?" The question weighed heavily on him. "Do I have a choice?" "Maddo, Kijo." He looked down at the Gorlans. "Nathal is right, and as much as I wish it were so, no amount of sheer will is going to suffice. There needs to be unity here. Your people need to work as one, not as individuals."
"No."
Maddo raised his arms. He already knew what was coming.
You cannot ask that of us. Do not say the words, Saru. Do not!
But he did. You must bring Eja up here. You must bring the hub to this place and let her do what she does best. Unify the will of the Gorlands.
No!
Mado's rage flared crimson in his cheeks, and he gestured with the red bands around his wrists flashing.
You know what this means, don't you? I protect her. I will not put her in harm's way.
We are all in harm's way, Saru replied, keeping his voice level. And we will all die, the hub along with us, if the Tholians are not driven off. You know this. He looked to Kijo. I know you can sense my aura, just as I can sense yours. Does it shade toward duplicity? Do you believe that I am lying to you?
You do not lie,
said Kijo at length, sighing deeply.
But what you ask, Eja is our most precious gift.
I know. Saru's head bobbed in a nod. But you need her here, more than you need her to be isolated away in some hidden chamber down below. He spread his hands, tipping back his head a few degrees. For a Kelpian, this was the ultimate gesture of submission, of openness, showing his naked throat and offering no defense against an outsider. Eja can help us all. Her abilities. Saru struggled to find the right words. They'll give us an edge against the Tholians.
She is holy to us, Mado retorted. She is a living link to the Creator. She must not be sullied by such things.
Two of Kijo's hands reached up and touched her comrade's shoulder.
You have sacrificed so much for our people, brother. Have you done so only for us to die here, in this nameless place? Saru is right. This is a matter of life and death for our colony, and for the Pelears, and these Starfleet officers.
Mado angrily shook her off.
I will not permit it!
One of his hands dropped to the hilt of a knife in his belt, and he retreated backward. Other Gorlands, most of them red bands, instinctively moved to his side.
Find another way!
What would Eja say if you asked her? Saru stepped forward to block Mado's path. He was very aware that if the Gorlan drew his blade, there would be little he could do to stop him from plunging it into his chest. Do you have the right to make this choice for her? Make him see, said a voice in his head. It sounded like Michael Burnham. You are afraid, Saru went on. I feel it radiating out of you like heat from a fire. I know that sensation. I live with it every day. But I overcome. I adapt. I ask you to do the same.
I will not risk her life!
Mado shouted the words in his face, and Saru saw the silver crescent of the curved knife flash as it emerged from its sheath.
It is not your place to decide.
The soft, unspoken voice was suddenly there in Saru's thoughts. Every one of the Gorlands froze, and Mado's blade slipped from his fingers, clattering to the deck by Saru's hoofed boots.
Eja, he breathed.
Saru felt her before he saw her, even as he turned back to the open elevator at the rear of the compartment. It was as if a breeze of cool, soothing air had passed across him, pushing away the coiling, heavy smoke of all the doubts and fears. The hub stood in her shabby white robes on the threshold of the command tier, looking around with open interest. A pair of muscular red bands were escorting her, but they seemed uneasy, as if they were caught between the compulsion to obey her and the desire to grab Eja and rush her back to a place of security. Moving with difficulty on her withered leg, she advanced into the room and her gaze briefly found Saru's. She smiled at him, then sought out Mado.
Kindred, what are you doing?
Her words broke the spell holding Mado in place, and the Gorlan pushed past Saru, rushing to Ija's side.
You cannot be here. You must go below, where it is safer.
Is it safer there?
She said, cutting across his words.
There are new dead and new wounded in the cargo modules, lives lost and others forever changed by that first attack.
Ija glanced at Saru.
I called them to crowd into the most forward pods, the ones closest to the sections of the ship where the hull is thickest, and abandon the other modules. Better that we cluster together in this than face adversity without community.
Who brought you?
Mado turned his ire on the two escorts.
Who told you to bring her up here?
She told them,
said Saru, seeing the moment unfold as if he had been there. I am right, aren't I? She knew this was going to come to pass. The hub saw it coming. Ija's head bobbed.
Sometimes the path is clearest when there is darkness all around. I go where I am needed.
I beg you.
Mado was imploring her, his eyes shining.
Please, Ija, return to the others. They need you.
I will not.
The hub spoke sharply, drawing herself up. Saru saw that one of her hands was freshly bandaged, possibly from a burn, but she showed no signs of distress.
I am not made of spun glass, Mado. I will not break beneath the slightest pressure. The ones who need me most are in this room.
She limped across to where Saru and Nathal were standing and gave them both a nod.
Show me what to do, and be swift.
Her gaze briefly lost focus and turned inward.
They're coming, in greater numbers, in all the possible paths. I see them coming.
How can she help the Gorlans to better fly and fight?
Said Nathal, studying the slight female with open dismay.
I don't understand.
I am the hub,
Ija said simply. She will give her people focus and unity, Saru explained.
We could all use some of that, muttered Wheaton.
And she has other talents. Saru frowned. Now that he was about to say it aloud, he realized how it would sound.
I believe she can see the future, he thought.
Ija possesses a latent precognitive sense, a telepathic ability. Nathal's incredulity showed on her face.
You want us to put our trust in a seer?
She made the last word an insult. Ija leaned close to the Pelear commander and spoke quietly. Saru barely caught the exchange between them.
You love your father, yes? Despite everything he has said and done.
Yes.
You will regret it if you do not tell him.
The hub's words struck Nathal silent. A strident chiming issued out from a vacant console, and Yashe stepped up to it. She visibly balked at what she read on the display there.
Lieutenant, I have a message coming in from Adjutant Crea on the warship. He says their sensors are picking up objects moving through the edge of the scattering field. Tholian ships. 4 of them this time.
Confirmed,
added Hekan, bringing up a holographic projection.
All 4 vessels are vectoring straight toward the Pelear warship. It's the same pair that attacked them before, this time with reinforcements.
Makes sense, said Wheaton. They're going to concentrate their firepower on the warship, take it out of play first. Then it'll be our turn.
Saru felt a tug on his sleeve, and he looked down to see Ija at his side. She pointed at Hekan's holograph.
I need to see that.
He blinked, unsure what she meant.
You are seeing it. Not with these.
Ija pointed at her eyes, then took Saru's hand and pressed it to her forehead.
With this?
He felt a strange tingling in his palm, and abruptly he realized he was touching the Gorlan sense organ that generated their aura fields.
Do you understand? I can only help if I see the way this ship sees.
She wants me to connect her to the Star Freighter's sensors. Saru's thoughts unspooled in a sudden rush. It was possible, of course. He could reprogram his tricorder to interpret the scanner outputs and render them not as text or images, but as a mild electromagnetic field. I can do that. There's just one thing. It will be painful for you.
Ija nodded.
I know. I trust you, Saru.
He took a deep breath and set to work. Prepare yourself. The Tholians were not ones to allow a mistake to stand. On their first engagement with the intruder craft, they had determined that the vessels of the Pulliar Zell were, at best, a minor risk to their forces, and dispatched a flight of warcraft commensurate with the threat represented by the aliens. The Tholians had engaged ships from the Pulliar moons on several occasions in the past, and in every incident it had been the carbon-based forms that had perished in their entirety. The Tholians were very good at making sure the aggressor races surrounding their territory remained afraid of them, ensuring that no distress calls were ever sent by their targets and no wreckage was ever found of the ships they destroyed. The remains of any intruder craft were spirited back to Tholia encased in energy webs where they could be picked apart and analyzed. In this way, the assembly grew stronger and more knowledgeable about its enemies, while the outsiders could only become more fearful of them and puzzle over the disappearances of their ships and crews. The Tholian assembly considered the Pulliars a low-level threat, a minor local power lacking the skill or resources of larger aggressor states like the Federation. Thus, when two Pulliar craft had not only driven off a flight of spinner ships, but actually crippled one of them, there was an immediate reevaluation of the tactical scenario. An error of judgment had been made. It would immediately be rectified. Four spinners powered in at maximum sublight velocity toward the craft identified earlier as a military fighter carrier. The Pulliars were still in the process of recovery operations for their inert drones, and they were caught off guard by the second assault wave. This time, rather than deploy the power-hungry energy-dampening weapon for a primary strike, the Tholians went for a split-pincer attack pattern, their tight approach coming open in a spiraling starburst that spread them across the defense zone. Guns on the carrier opened up with desultory bursts, but the swift crystal arrowheads spun out of the firing line. In return, they sent back lashes of crimson particles, beams cutting through the blackness, revealing the deflector shield perimeters as the strikes hit home and battered the protective energy envelopes. The carrier was a dedicated combat vessel, and it was built to withstand a sustained attack, but the Tholians fathomed its weaknesses and struck at them. Shield emitters, pushed to their limits by one direct hit after another, buckled and finally failed. Shots from the dancing spinner ships slammed into the unprotected hull, and the Pulliar vessel trembled up and down the length of its curved fuselage. Atmospheric gas and sparking discharges from severed power trains bled into the vacuum. Robbed of its defenses, unable to launch its fighter drones, the carrier was a slow, heavy target waiting to be carved apart by the Tholian attackers.
"They're going to destroy it," said Kijo,
aghast at the ruthless efficiency with which the Tholians were assaulting the Pulliar carrier.
"Like carrion birds tearing at a wounded herd beast."
Saru looked to Nathal, and he saw doubt in the brusque Pulliar woman's expression.
"Commander?" he prompted.
She took a step closer, her voice dropping.
"The initial attack, that was my first taste of real open battle. I confess, it has left me challenged."
Nathal frowned, angry at her own words, but she quickly smothered the reaction.
"Lieutenant Saru, I would welcome your input."
"Flee."
The impulse came from somewhere deep, dark, and primal in him. The Kelpian resisted the urge to say the word and stiffened. We must disrupt the Tholian attack on the carrier.
Agreed. But the range of our weapons is limited, she noted. We would need to close to almost point-blank range.
Saru dwelled on Kijo's description of the attack, the carrion birds and the herd beast, and he recalled something from his homeworld, a sight he had seen with his own eyes as a youth. The Ba'ul would drive away packs of scavengers from their kills with shows of aggression. Perhaps the same could be done with the Tholians.
Indeed, he said. But we should use the other weapon at our disposal. This ship.
You want to charge them?
Kijo understood immediately.
That's a bold move.
It's one we can accomplish, said Nathal, regaining some of her earlier steel. She shot Ija a look.
Can you make them work together, Gorlan? I need to know.
I can, said the hub.
Her hands were trembling as she gripped Saru's tricorder.
We can.
We can, repeated Mado. We will.
All sublight drives to full power.
Nathal gave the order, and the star freighter lurched forward.
Saru, I am ceding helm control to you. Don't make me regret trusting you.
Commander?
He accepted the order and splayed his hands out over the podium. Saru's throat turned arid, and all of a sudden the collar of his uniform felt tight and restricting, but he buried those distractions.
Power curve is stable, said Kijo.
Mado nodded.
Thrust matrix stable.
Together,
whispered Ija, and somehow her soft voice carried across the compartment.
We move. Together.
The hub's soothing aura washed over Saru, and the tension in him ebbed. He had to resist the urge to look down at her, to wonder how it was she was able to do this. Before, the subtle electro-emotional fields shared by the Gorlans were a dissonant clash of conflicting fears and doubts. Now they were meshing like the cogs of an invisible machine, the calm and the focus extending out to touch each one in turn. Ija breathed in and out in long, slow gasps, and as Saru watched, every Gorlan on the command deck fell into the exact same rhythm. It was working.
Lieutenant Saru, take us in, said Nathal. We will follow your lead.
He nodded and stared into the depths of the main viewer. Turret guns, fire at will. Our aim is to interrupt their attack pattern, not to destroy them.
Sir, do you want to try that tractor beam trick again?
Asked Wheaton. They won't fall for it a second time, Ensign, Saru replied. Put all available power to forward shields and the inertial dampers. Make sure the refugees in the cargo modules are protected.
Working on it,
came the reply. The big transport ship was moving swiftly now, gathering momentum. On the screen, the mass of the Pelear carrier and its attackers loomed large. The first of the Tholian spinners reacted to the oncoming juggernaut and broke off from its attack pattern, drawing back toward its fellows.
They see us, said Yashe. Reading increased transmissions between all Tholian vessels.
They're wondering what we are doing, said Mado. Perhaps they think we are going to run.
They will fire.
Ija tugged on Saru's sleeve, and he heard the pain in her voice.
I see it.
Her eyes screwed tightly shut, she reached out another hand and pointed at an area on Saru's vector screen.
There.
Tholians are locking weapons on us, shouted Wheaton.
Brace yourselves.
Saru thumbed a lateral thruster control, and the freighter listed sharply to port, just as a lance of searing crimson fire issued from the prow of a Tholian ship and cut through the space where Ija had indicated.
Here,
she said, touching a different place. Saru felt her aura surround him. She was trying to bring him into the unity, guide him, just as the hub was guiding all her kindred. Saru silenced a jolt of panic and allowed it to happen. They moved in coordination, weaving the giant ship back and forth through the oncoming torrent of beam fire. Glancing shots flared off the deflectors, but still the bulky freighter's reaction was too swift for the Tholians to concentrate their firepower for more than a few seconds at a time. The spinners were drawing back, and Saru wondered if they had decided to deploy the energy dampeners after all. The weapon would upset all their plans if it was triggered. "We must ensure it is not," he told himself, and he dragged the big ship's vector around to aim it right at the heart of the Tholian squadron's formation. "Give me maximum thrust," said Saru, "and hold fast." The star freighter bullied its way through the debris field left by the earlier engagement and into a headlong course toward the spinner ships. At the last second, the Tholian craft broke away in four different directions, forced to disengage and fall back from their attack on the wounded carrier or risk a collision. Saru glimpsed one of the dagger-shaped ships barely avoid clashing its shields with the freighters, and he saw the red blur of its engine grids as it came about, pivoting to track them.
"It worked!" called Wheaton. "They've stopped shooting at the Pelears!"
He gave a wild grin, and words spilled out of him.
"I could have made a crack about playing chicken there, and I didn't."
"Look sharp, talk less," Saru retorted, channeling Captain Georgiou once more. "Perhaps if we live through this, you can explain to me the connection between Terran poultry animals and keeping one's nerve, but not now."
"They are coming after us,"
whispered Ija, but Saru didn't need her to tell him. He could see the Tholian craft following their leader, extending into a skirmish line to pursue the transport ship.
"You've angered them."
"Good," said Nathal. "They're reacting instead of thinking. We need to exploit that."
She looked to Saru.
"The aft cargo modules are all vacated now, yes?"
"Yes,"
Ija answered for him. The strain in her reply was clear. Nathal turned to her second-in-command.
"Hekan, give the Tholians something else to think about. Keep them off balance. Release the empty modules into our impulse wake."
"Complying," said the engineer.
Saru felt the tremor run along the deck and up through his hooves. On a secondary viewer, he saw a dozen huge metallic cubes suddenly detach from the freighter's flanks and tumble away. The lead Tholian ship was too close, and as it whirled into a punishing thruster turn, one of the large container pods slammed into it, becoming a cloud of steel splinters. The spinner ship fell into an uncontrolled tumble, and Saru saw it drop off the bottom of the viewscreen, captured by the powerful gravity well of the nearby planet. In response to this act, the remaining three Tholians opened fire as one, spraying the rear of the star freighter with high-energy blasts.
"Wheaton,"
Saru called out to the junior officer,
"can you vent the warp plasma from our drive nacelles?"
The question took the ensign off guard.
"I guess I could, but we need that for warp drive."
Saru's eyes narrowed. "I am aware of how the technology works."
"What are you thinking, Kelpian?" demanded Mado. "Your man is right. Release that plasma, and we lose the ability to go to warp."
"It would take hours to replenish," agreed Hekan.
"Does anyone here truly believe the Tholians will allow us to run?"
Saru asked the question of all of them, and it seemed strange to hear the words coming from his own lips.
"A trapped animal's reaction is always fight or flight. I believe only the former option is open to us."
"You want them to catch us?"
Mado pressed, his irritation flaring.
"Kindred," said Ija, silencing him with a word. "We trust Saru. Let him proceed."
Nathal gave a reluctant nod.
"Agreed. Venting warp plasma, now!"
Wheaton tapped out a command string on his panel, and the secondary viewer fogged as a mass of shimmering white-gray vapor ejected from the ring of engine nacelles around the hull of the starfreighter. At the same moment, Saru deliberately put the ship into an off-kilter spin, simulating a loss of control at the helm.
The Tholians have ceased fire, reported Yashay. They must think we took a hit to our guidance systems.
Let's not give them time to consider the question, said Saru. His voice was on the verge of cracking, but he kept on. All turret guns, aim aft.
Saru's hands were trembling, and he placed them flat on the panel in front of him to try and halt the reaction.
You want me to point the guns right at the cloud of highly unstable plasma?
Wheaton's expression shifted as he spoke.
Oh, okay. Tholian ships are changing course, called Yashay. Sir, they're on to us. Fire!
Saru shouted out the order, hating how desperate he sounded.
All turrets!
A stream of energy bolts spat from the transport ship's meager weapons array, streaking past the Tholians and into the mass of the swiftly dissipating plasmatic fog. Where the blasts passed through the gaseous matter, an uncontrolled energetic reaction lit off, and sheets of fire exploded into being, spreading in flash-burn surges across the star freighter's wake. Empty cargo modules tumbling through the haze were caught by the effect and torn apart, adding to the chaos. Bright jags of thermic discharge whipped across, raking over the Tholian spinners as they desperately tried to get away from the brief, fierce inferno. On the far side of the plasma cloud, the wounded Pelear carrier seized the opportunity to add its firepower to the surprise attack. The carrier sent a spread of Merculite rockets from its missile tubes to put up a wall of detonations behind the Tholian attackers. Without warning, the spinners found themselves trapped in a hellstorm of plasmatic flame. The sensors registered massive secondary surges of ignition, and Saru's gut lurched as he realized he was looking at the Tholian ships being destroyed. He felt sick inside.
But they left you no choice, said the Burnham voice in his mind.
A single wounded Tholian spinner burst out of the fire as it dissolved, scored black with damage and trailing pieces of itself. The craft bolted away at maximum impulse and raced toward the edge of sensor range. The gathered collective on the transport ship's bridge let out a ragged cheer as they watched the attacker flee, but Saru couldn't summon the emotion to join with them in their shared victory. He felt hollowed out and heavy with fatigue, as if he had aged months in the blink of an eye.
"Incoming signal from the carrier," called Yashay. "Adjutant Kraya passes on a message from Admiral Taw. He wants his daughter to know that the cohort will be impressed by her conduct."
"Tell him our allies deserve the credit," said Nathal.
Saru barely registered the conversation as he and Ija watched the viewscreen and the shrinking dot of the surviving Tholian, while all around them, Federation, Gorlan, and Pelear citizens clapped each other on the back and exchanged words of thanks. Ija looked away toward the secondary screen showing the wreckage left behind by the brief battle.
"Creator, absolve them," she said to herself. "This is violence done out of necessity, not desire."
"You give an entreaty for those that would have destroyed you?" said the Kelpian.
"It is for you as well as them," she said, looking up at him. "I know you, Saru. I know the will to go to this extreme comes hard for a being of your kind."
He gave a brief, bitter smile.
"A timid recreant, you mean?"
Ija reached out and touched his hand.
"I mean one who knows what it is to see the face of death. You went against your nature to fight for us."
"I could do nothing else," he said, and found he meant every word. Saru released a gasp of air as if he had been holding it in all along.
"At least we can breathe now."
"Not yet."
His blood ran cold at the note of soft reproach in the hub's voice.
"It isn't over."
"Lieutenant?"
Something in Wheaton's tone rang a warning in Saru's mind, and the Kelpian briefly abandoned his station, racing across to the ensign's side in three quick strides.
"Tell me," he said.
Wheaton couldn't find the words, so he just pointed.
The tactical scan visible on his screen showed a segment of the star system, the curve of the orbit of the sanctuary planet, and indicator sigils for the Pelear ships. As Wheaton manipulated the graphic to zoom out and show a larger area, the icon designating the fleeing Tholian appeared on the edge of sensor range, and beyond it, the fuzzy boundary of the scattering field the aliens had deployed earlier. Two new icons resolved at the scan's perimeter. One was another of the spinner ships, identical in mass and configuration to the craft that had been dogging them for the last few hours. The other was at least 8 times the size of the smaller vessel, and even at this distance, the freighter's sensor palette was reading power outputs comparable to one of Starfleet's newer Constitution-class ships, or a Klingon D-10 battlecruiser. Saru couldn't stop himself from looking up, across to where the hub was standing. Ija was staring right at him, a terrible kind of knowing in her eyes.
"It isn't over,"
she silently repeated the ominous statement. "They're moving to regroup with the survivor." Wheaton found his voice at last. "Lieutenant, I've never even heard of a Tholian ship of that type before."
"I believe that is because no one who has seen one has lived to speak of it," Saru replied.
"That's not very encouraging, sir," said Wheaton. "When you have faced death as often as I have, you tend to develop a clear-eyed perception of the reality of things, Ensign." Saru stepped away from the console and walked back toward his own panel. The elation that had spread through the group was gone, and in its place, a darker mood was settling. Against her better judgment, Ija's bleak foreknowledge was bleeding into the unity of the Gorlands, silencing them, and the Pelears quickly picked up on the shifting temper around them.
"What is wrong?" said Nathal.
"It seems our respite will be brief, Commander," Saru told her. "The Tholians are regrouping for another attack. I don't know if we can resist them a third time."
It cut him like a blade to admit it, and that inward voice of his cried out in defiance of the fate he knew they were going to face. A flurry of possibilities rose and fell in his thoughts. Could they evacuate the refugees back to the sanctuary planet, perhaps even land the freighter? Would they be any safer down there than up here in orbit? Would the Tholians even entertain the thought of accepting a surrender after the blood that had been shed? Was there something he was missing, some shred of hope that he could grasp, some tactic he could employ to stave off destruction for just a little longer? In Saru's darkest nightmares, he would feel the hot breath of a Ba'ul upon the bare flesh of his neck, hear the rumble of its massive beating heart, and smell the stinking raw meat odor of its exhalations. In the dream, in the blackness of it, the moment would never end. The terrible fear in the instant before the hulking predator struck stretched out into infinity. Death reaching for him, shrouded in the certainty that it was inescapable. He felt that now, shaded by a great sorrow. Saru had always believed he would perish alone, but it would not be so. Ija and the Gorlands, Nathal and her people, Wheaton and Yashe, and everyone else who had put their faith in Saru, they would all follow him to the end. "I am sorry," he wanted to say. "This is all my fault."
"I'm getting a new hail,"
said Yashe, breaking the grim hush.
"The Tholians?"
Kijo's voice had a brief note of hopefulness. Perhaps they might still find a way out of this, but the Vaksha shook her head.
"Not Tholian."
Her brow furrowed as she tried to lock down the transmission.
"The scattering field is making it hard to read. It's not a Pelear Zell signal either. I don't—"
"Let me hear it," ordered the lieutenant. Yashe did as she was ordered, but the sound issuing from the command deck's speakers was thick with distortion and grating echo effects. Saru pulled up a repeater panel and saw the incoming subspace wave bands. The pattern wasn't alien. It was familiar.
"This is a Starfleet frequency,"
Sensor contact, called Wheaton. Another ship emerging from behind the planet's magnetosphere.
Attention, said a voice. It was roughened by static and interference, but to Saru's ears it was as clear as a bolt from the blue. This is